Hey there, podcast listeners. This is Justin from Beyond the Uniform. My goal is to help military veterans in their civilian career. This week, I'm speaking with John Vardaman. Not to play favorites, but I have to say this is probably my favorite interview so far. John is a senior construction manager at Tesla, the darling of Silicon Valley. He was a project manager in the construction industry for over 8 years. And does a great job of explaining the construction industry, project management, why he chose that industry, recruiters and the advantage of time and at-bats when using recruiters, also grad school. I just thought it was a very balanced perspective on the value of gaining experience prior to jumping into advanced education, as he had a couple years at construction under his belt before he got his master's degree at Stanford in design. What I really enjoyed about this too is having spoken with many business school graduates, being one myself, we are jacks of all trade, masters of none. John, on the other hand, has really done a deep dive in a functional role and an industry in a way that is just really inspiring. And you can tell he's got a real passion for what he does and where he works. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, there are show notes. I give timestamps for the different topics we cover in this interview. So if you do want to just jump around to the items that may be pertinent to you and your intentions, feel free to check it out at beyondtheuniform.io. But I think this one's well worth listening to straight through. So here is John Vardaman. All right. Well, John, thanks for joining me. You're in Reno right now. Is that right?
That's correct.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to speak with me before the weekend here.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure.
So for our listeners, I wanted to give some quick background on you, John. So John studied systems engineering at the Naval Academy, and he served as a human intelligence officer in the Marine Corps. After his military service, John transitioned to DPR Construction. They're one of the top 25 construction contractors in the country. He worked there for 8 years, first as a project engineer and then a project manager. And while there, he also earned a master's in sustainable design and construction at Stanford University. He now works at Tesla, which is one of the most admired companies in Silicon Valley for their work with electric vehicles. And he works as a senior construction manager at Tesla's Gigafactory over in Reno, Nevada. They're pioneering battery production work and reducing the cost of that. So, John, maybe to start with, I'd love to learn about at what point you knew you were going to leave the military and how you approached that decision.
Yeah, I would definitely say that's one of my more difficult decisions I've ever made, especially, you know, coming through the academy. You have to make such an early commitment to the military. It's not just the 5 years. You really go in from high school knowing it's at least a 9-year commitment. And it's something I had always felt, you know, strongly called to do. It just felt like a really good fit for me. And I actually enjoyed my time in the service very much. But as I finished a couple of deployments, like most folks in my sort of year group, it was, you know, the deployment cycle, as I'm sure most people that are still in will attest to, was pretty hectic. And there were two things that were really driving me to consider a career outside the military. One was, you know, starting a family. I got married my last year in, and it's extremely difficult, I think, to have a family in that type of environment and be deploying. And to the folks that have done that, my hat is certainly off to you guys. Tremendous accomplishment. It's very difficult. I think the other one is I started looking ahead to what was my long-term career going to be like. As you said, I was a human intelligence officer. I picked that purposefully when I was going through the basic school. But the long-term career path for that was fairly limited. And while my next 5 or 6 years in the military were going to be great, the options after that were, quite frankly, I didn't see them as being that, I didn't see those as being that, that appealing. And so I made the decision to get out knowing that it was better to get out after, you know, the 5-year transition point than the 10 or 15 year transition point. Although there's certainly people that do that successfully as well.
Thank you. And as you made that difficult decision to leave, Did you decide to stay in the reserves, or how did you kind of weigh the pros and cons of doing that?
You know, I looked at it very hard, very carefully. I actually went to a couple of reserve recruiting events, for lack of a better term, once I relocated up to the Bay Area. And probably if I'd found the exact right opportunity, I would have done the reserves. It was just geographically, there was nothing that really lined up in my area that essentially would not have had me, you know, redeploying again almost immediately, which was one of the driving factors to decide to relocate and pursue a civilian career. So ultimately, I just went with the all-in option of not being in the reserves and just sort of fully committing to life outside the military.
Mm. And I was really interested around DPR construction. So in some of the data I've put together, Marines are the most likely of all naval officers to go into real estate and construction as an industry. About 5.5 of officers pursue that. And then at the same time, and we'll get into your role there, but you've done this program and project management type functional role, which is the third highest functional role amongst naval officers. About 10.5% of veterans pursue that. So maybe to start off, how did you go about finding your first job?
Sure. I think I actually took probably a pretty common pathway using military headhunters, for lack of a better term, Lucas Group. I think was one of those. I used two or three, quite frankly, just to get as much experience as possible. It can be pretty intimidating going from the military to the civilian world, not having any experience in that. So I just wanted to get as much exposure to the interview process as I could. But that's the primary way I engaged various employers when I was out starting my job search.
What did you like most about the recruiter programs, and what did you like least about that?
Well, I think the best part is there's a wide variety of companies to choose from. They come in looking for military experience, and I think they value that. So you don't have to try and kind of justify, you know, what value a military background brings. Because the companies come in knowing that that's what they're going to get. They value that. They want that. You still have to go through sort of the translation part of translating, you know, military qualifications into the civilian world and helping them understand that. But they certainly are advocates, if you will, and they're supportive of what you've been doing the past few years, and they desire that. I think probably the least, it was just at times you can feel pressured is probably too strong of a word and does a disservice to the recruiting companies. But they're obviously there as a business, and they make money by getting you hired. So the sooner you get hired, the better it is for them. And I don't fault that for them. I think that's one of the things you realize as you move into the civilian world, that it's not a bad thing to want to make money and have a successful business, but you just need to be honest with them and you need to be honest with yourself. And if you're not ready to accept an offer, don't feel pressured into that. The right job and the right position will come along, and you have a valuable skill set and you can find that good fit. And so I would say that's probably the one negative, but even that, it was, you know, like I said, pressured is probably too strong of a word, but there's certainly that possibility.
Yeah, it seems like the recruiting agencies do a good job of playing that matchmaker role and kind of facilitating that. And like you said, at least the people you're speaking with then, you know, they are familiar with the military and they want to hire a veteran. And I imagine that simplifies the process. And do you remember how far before you got out, did you start to interact with the recruiters, and how long did that process take?
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't know exactly, but I would say probably about a year out.
Okay. And I
was fortunate that I had that time. I don't think it's necessary to have a year. It really just worked out with my unit and where I was in terms of the deployment cycle and staffing levels in my unit at that time that I was afforded that opportunity. I would say at least 6 months, thinking back on it, would be plenty of time. And that's another good thing about these companies is they do help you prepare. I mean, they do resume reviews, they do mock interviews. And again, that's most veterans, I think, probably have not had a lot of experience with that, you know, in the 3, 4, 5 years that they've been in. So it was tremendously valuable.
That's great. How many would you guess companies did you interview with?
Oh, geez. I probably did 3 or 4 hiring fairs. So I would say maybe 20 companies, honestly. Probably a little overkill, but I wanted to really see what was out there. And oftentimes these things happen in a relatively short period of time. And I just dedicated, you know, an entire day to interviewing with as many companies as I could that I thought might be good to work for.
That's great. I mean, I view this from, as an entrepreneur, from the fundraising process, and one of my advisors had just talked about wanting to get as many at-bats as possible and just get in front of as many investors as possible to boost your chance of a fundraising. And it sounds like what's great about your having had that year is you were able to get in front of so many different possible employers, and not just for your own practice, but I imagine that allowed you to get a better sense of which people you liked more, which industries you liked more, which job, because you're just constantly able to compare them to each other. And so it sounds like that put you in a pretty strong position then to decide on one that you really liked.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Exactly right, Justin. And I think, you know, it's a bit analogous to, you know, every different branch of service has a slightly different personality. And then, you know, as you've spent a few years in your particular branch, then each, you know, occupational specialty or each warfare specialty can even have its own personality. And the civilian world is no different. Different industries have, you know, different sort of cultures. And even within industries, there are different companies. Google and Intel are different companies. They're both successful, but you need to find which one you fit with, both in terms of an industry and a company, for your personality and your passion. And I think the only way to do that is just getting as much exposure as possible.
I agree. And what was it about the role or the industry or the company that really drew you into DPR Construction?
Well, one, I knew I wanted to be in a program management or project management role, either in construction or in some type of manufacturing. And as you said, that I think you said that was the third most popular sort of industry or career path for veterans to select. And that makes that's not a surprise hearing that statistic, because for me, I felt that as an officer, a lot of what I did was sort of project management. It was you know, planning. In some cases, planning to, you know, invade a country or do some fairly extreme operations. But you know, when you broke it down to its core elements, it was project management. It was coming up with a schedule, getting resources, and then going and executing on that. And I really enjoyed the intellectual side of that and making things happen. So I focused my, you know, search around those manufacturing and construction companies. Ultimately, sort of decided I wanted to do construction just because I really have more of a passion for that. I mean, I love the fast-paced nature. I love seeing something come out of the ground and the tangible result, and then moving on and doing it again, and everything's a little different. And then you start focusing on the company you want to work for in that particular industry or sector. And for me, DPR was a good fit because it had a very open culture, and it was sort of based around, you know, small teams and a very flat organization, which I really appreciated. It was a little bit counterculture to the military in that it was a Bay Area sort of based organization. And it was very flat, very little hierarchy. You know, everyone sat in an open office, and the founder of the company, you just called him by his first name. That's actually what DPR stands for. It's the founders, Doug, Peter, and Ron. It's their first names. So the culture is very appealing. But DPR was just, it was a great cultural fit. And I really focused on their message that you would be allowed to progress as fast as your abilities would carry you. So that appealed to me. There was no time and rank requirements, so to speak. And for my 10 years there, they held true to that. So I really enjoyed that.
And I just wanted to highlight for listeners one thing that you just slipped in really effectively when you were talking about project manager is you really naturally explained how what you did in the Marine Corps and what appealed to you in the Marine Corps, how it was basically what you wanted to do as a project manager. And I just wanted to point out, I thought that was a really effective way of explaining your background in terms of how it would be advantageous for that oncoming role. And that's one thing that's come up in other interviews is the importance of being able to explain your background in terms to the employer that they'll find valuable. And I thought you did a great job of that.
Thanks. Yeah, and I certainly think that's probably the biggest hurdle that I felt as a exiting veteran is translating what I knew and believed to be very valuable experience and skill set into terms that sort of resonated with the civilian world. And I can say once you're on the other side of that, it gets to be very easy, but it can seem a little daunting at first.
Mm. Just for the exercise of it, how would you explain, I mean, you did a little bit of that, but when speaking about your Marine Corps experience or just military experience in general, how do you think that plays into a project management type role?
Well, I think if you've been in a position where you're, a unit leader and you're responsible for managing a budget and a schedule and hitting certain objectives that you're given. Those general terms, I mean, I don't even remember what the specific terms are from the military. It's amazing how quickly you sort of phase out of that. But you're hitting your quarterly training and your annual training requirements. I mean, that's very analogous to, and those are generated by training command or your higher headquarters. Those are very analogous to hitting various production or even sales goals that are generated by your internal organization in the civilian world. You know, managing people and writing performance reviews in the civilian world is no different than, small unit leadership and fit reps in the military world. And so I think employers understand that you have a background in that, if that is indeed your background, I think is very valuable for them when they understand that you've been in those positions. You may not know exactly how to run a manufacturing plant, but you know how to go out and find resources and use those resources to meet objectives that are given to you.
You know, what stands out about that too that I love is kind of the sense that numbers are the universal language. And I was literally just helping my cousin with her resume, and she's in health services, which I know nothing about. But it's amazing when you just start breaking down anything that's numeric of, what percentage growth did you see, or for an inspection, did you improve? Anytime you can break it down into actual performance metrics, you don't even have to know the industry. You can just look and say like, okay, this person has a track record of making things better or meeting deadlines or lowering costs or whatever it is. And so one of the things I liked about what you said is trying to tease out those numeric details where possible, because then it's easier for someone to understand a kind of a history of excellence or a history of performance, which will translate to any job.
Absolutely. I've yet to encounter a business a successful business that didn't track and value metrics. So I think anything you can pull from past, performance reviews, fit reps, just notes you kept, and use that in both your resume and then in just interviews as examples, it's tremendously valuable.
That's great. And for those who are on active duty who might not be familiar with a project engineer or project manager role at a construction company, what was that day-to-day life like in terms of just, hours, teams, just painting that picture of what life was like?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the reasons a lot of military personnel might be drawn to construction is that it can be very analogous to sort of a military hierarchy or structure. And I say that in the sense that you have sort of an office side and a field side, which in some ways, and this is a loose analogy, that kind of equates to an officer side and an enlisted side. So I would have a general superintendent for a project who is kind of the senior enlisted for that project. As a project manager, I was sort of the unit commander. As a project engineer, I was sort of a junior officer or a staff officer of that unit. The other superintendents and foremen in the field were the senior enlisted and non-coms and whatnot. So I think that type of relationship back and forth makes a lot of sense just sort of intuitively for folks in the military. And it's not, you know, it sort of loses its relationship after a while, but it helps you kind of get started and know where you're coming from and kind of how to relate to folks.
That's great. And did you have to travel, and like what were the on average how many hours per week, just stuff like that? I think is always interesting.
Sure. I was pretty fortunate in that I did not have to travel, and that was, you know, I think you really should seek that out during the interview process. And most companies, I think, are pretty honest about that, if that's going to be a requirement or not. And for me, it was something I was trying to avoid initially in my career. And then hours-wise, you know, I worked just as many hours or probably a little more as I did when I was in the military. And I probably averaged about 50 hours a week. Some weeks it was a little more, some it was a little less. And I think, again, just sort of drawing those analogies between the military and construction, building a project is a bit like deployment. You go through sort of this, you go through a cycle where you might be working 12, 14 hour days, and then you get to a steady state in the middle of the project, and it's not as hard, not as many hours. As you're finishing up a project, again, you kind of ramp back up. And then when the project is over, hopefully you get a little bit of downtime. So it's kind of analogous to a deployment cycle in my mind.
That's great. And for this, let's say like the first couple of years out of the military, in what ways did you feel ahead of your peers because of your military service? And in what ways did you feel like you were behind your civilian counterparts and had to catch up because of the military service?
Yeah, that's a really great question, because I had a lot of good conversations with my peers as I started working. I was very fortunate that I landed in a company and on a project where I had four or five other guys that were all sort of my age range. We'd all graduated, you know, college around the same time. They'd obviously not gone the military route, and they'd entered construction immediately. And they certainly had a huge technical advantage over me. And I think, you know, just like when you go into the military, you have to spend so much time just learning the jargon and the acronyms and sort of the lingo. The civilian world is no different. And so, you know, just focusing on that and getting them to help me with that and understanding, you know, every industry and every company has a process or processes and learning how to navigate those. And, you know, even learning that, you know, especially out here in California, that it's okay to just call everybody by their first name. Some of that practical advice they could give me was tremendously helpful. And it's actually a lot of things you can just make up with through good old fashioned hard work and effort and just sort of cramming, you know, more information and kind of taking on more responsibilities to speed up that growth curve, if you will. On the flip side, and they were, you know, they were sort of, awe is the wrong word, but they were sort of envious, I would almost say, of my comfort in dealing with a variety of situations that they thought were pretty stressful, but I think were just sort of commonplace to me, whether it be, you know, there's even in the civilian world, there's still confrontation, personal confrontation, you know, trying to work out issues where you don't see eye to eye with people. There's business stress from trying to hit deadlines and budgets, things like that, that, you know, just sort of, I think, pale in comparison to some of the day-to-day stresses you deal with in the military or that you can deal with in the military. And then I think also there's just the leadership you've been exposed to as a member of the military that you may not even realize until you get into the civilian world, and you're just more accustomed to dealing with people and problems and unexpected situations, and just sort of working your way through those. In reality, that can't be taught. It just has to be experienced. And so I think in that sense, I was ahead of my peers. And because you can't really cram that type of, you can't just work harder at that, so to speak. You just have to have that time to get better and experience more of that. It actually allowed me to catch up to them much quicker than they were going to catch up to me, if I were to put it in black and white terms.
That's great, man. That's really well put. You know, one thing I'm curious about is I feel like whether we realize it or not, when we're on active duty, we have kind of assumptions of what life will be like on the civilian side. And I'm wondering what was the most surprising thing or one of the most surprising things about civilian life that you hadn't known about when you were on active duty?
Yeah, geez, wow, that's a great question. And again, I'll try to answer without insulting, but I think there's, you probably, at least I did, and I think the military, for selfish reasons, but totally understandable and sort of encourages, is that this view that, you know, like people in the civilian world are sort of lazy and yet greedy at the same time. I found that's sort of blunt, and it's not very polite to say, but I think I had that in my head that, you know, we are the military, and we're, you know, the only honorable people out there, and you know, we're sort of a cut above. And I would just say that honestly, I met some really, really great people that worked super hard in the civilian world, and they were dedicated. And you know, they had not necessarily chosen to serve their country in a military capacity, but they were super patriotic. Had maybe different views than I did. It was a continued eye-opening experience in that regard. But I was just sort of refreshed, I think, to find that, no, there's really great people that, you know, just may have not even had exposure to even ever join the military. And I really enjoyed, you know, meeting them and working with them, just as I did all the variety of people I met when I was in the service. So yeah, I would just say that there's great people that are working really hard, and it's just a different line of work. And be excited about that. Be excited about meeting those people and sort of, you know, joining them and working just as hard.
That's great. I mean, as you say that, it makes me realize that, you know, in the military, you have almost like a common set of values and character traits that are admired. And in some ways, and this isn't meant to simplify the military world, but in some ways, because of this common experience and this shared experience, it's like there's a common viewpoint, common ground, common heritage, which in many ways builds a lot of camaraderie and close ties. And then as you talk about that transition, it's something I hadn't realized until you said that, where it is in many ways broadening that definition of success and virtues and, you know, the positive and the negative, and seeing that success and patriotism and all these other things can take on many forms. And a lot of those, at least I wasn't as exposed to in the military. And I don't say that in any way denigrating the military or outside of it, but it's just, I hadn't thought about it until you said it like that, where there is kind of a broader view of these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you. You have to sort of be able to say that, you know, without denigrating the military, that they have personnel levels to maintain as well. And if they're not trying to keep you in the military, then, you know, there's folks who's, that's their job is retention in the military. And, you know, they're going to try and do that. And it's not a bad thing. It's just, it's the business they have to maintain as well. But there's great people out here. And I think you bring up a good point too, Justin, that you've got to, I mean, the camaraderie and sort of the common experience we share in the military and those core values, that was probably a little bit of my arrogance, is that, you know, those core values were near and dear to me as a member of the military, but I didn't think that you could generate sort of a similar, I don't call it a belief structure, but sort of, you know, that the core values could be as meaningful in a civilian company. And I sort of scoffed initially at when you would read, you know, mission statements and core values for private companies. But after I joined DPR and really began to, you know, work with them and other companies as well and saw their culture, I actually completely reversed that thinking. And I would encourage everyone to ask the people you're interviewing with, what is your mission statement? What are your core values? What are you trying to do? What's the purpose of your company? And if you don't identify with that, it's probably not a good fit. And so you can find that sort of shared, you know, camaraderie and culture and core beliefs out there if you look for it and seek it out, because generally you're going to find a group of like-minded people if you match those things up.
That's great. And one other thing before I move on to kind of talking about Stanford and Tesla is, you've got a lot of management experience at this point. You know, you've got 5-6 years in the military, and then you've got even more than that at DPR Construction and now at Tesla. And I was interested in learning in what ways you find leadership and management outside of the military differs from leadership and management inside of the military, if that makes sense.
Sure. I would honestly say it's harder. Quite frankly, it is more difficult outside of the military. I think inside the military, there's certainly challenges, no doubt. But I think there's also, you know, people go into the military looking for challenges, looking for, you know, experiences that may place them in difficult situations and working long hours or, you know, exposed to various hazards, whether it's wartime or peacetime. But people are sort of expecting that. And I think when you get in a civilian world, you know, other things that you probably wouldn't consider a big deal in the military can sometimes cause big issues with the people you're trying to lead or manage. And I think there's, you know, I certainly would chalk it up to a lessons learned on my part. Even to this day, sometimes I can dismiss those offhand because of my military experience, and I have to stop myself and say, okay, let me look at this through their eyes. This, you know, is this really an issue, and how do I handle this? So I just think, in a word, it's a little more challenging because there's not that same, you know, type of discipline that you have in the military. Not to say, you know, there's not a certain type of discipline, but it's just not the same sort of culture necessarily that you have there. And I would also say that it gets to be, in many ways, I'm sure it's just like it is in the military. You know, had I stayed in and you become a manager of managers, that's also been a new and challenging experience, that you find yourself even further removed from the tip of the spear, so to speak, yet trying to affect change at the tip of the spear. It can be a very challenging situation as well.
Great. And another one of the reasons why I was excited to connect was that you had a decent amount of industry experience before you went on to pursue your master's degree. And it seems like you also did that while still working. And I'd love just to learn a little bit more about that experience. What motivated you to get an advanced degree? What it was like juggling that with while working full time, and just any thoughts in general on that path?
Yeah, excellent. I was thinking about that question. Actually, I had surprisingly strong opinions about it for what's a fairly innocuous question. So why I wanted to do it, I think it was probably twofold. Primarily, it was just a personal goal of mine. I'd always wanted to get an advanced degree. I considered law school and a couple of other things, but for whatever reason, it was just personally important to me to do that, just continued self-improvement, continued education, and just a goal I'd set a long time ago. And then secondarily, it was just a way for me to learn more about my chosen profession. And I think that's something that, you know, I felt very strongly about. If you're going to dedicate yourself to go do something, I wanted to be good at it. One of the ways to do that is to go back to school and really get that sort of technical and theoretical part of that education, you know, go check that box. And it was really valuable. I do think that one of the things I noticed, at least in my graduate experience, is that there was a trend toward people doing that immediately after they finished their undergrad. And I just don't think it would be, it didn't strike me as being that valuable. I think having that work experience before you go back to graduate school makes the whole process just that much richer of an experience, because you can really, you know, draw on your experiences, and other folks, you know, can draw on theirs. And graduate school is a much different type of environment than undergrad, where it's really, you know, a lot of what you're doing is driven by the other students in the class and what your own experiences have been. So I think if I was able to tell folks the in my mind what the perfect way to do it would be, and everyone has their own circumstances, you know, it would be to go out and try to get a couple of years of work experience and then go to grad school if that's what you want to do. I would also say that I was working while I did it. And again, everyone's in their own circumstances, and I would say that's a lot less than ideal. Not so much just the hard work and the late nights trying to balance two lives, but you end up not being able to get, you're not getting as much out of your graduate education as you possibly could, because again, a lot of what it's based upon is, you know, interacting with your other students, building those relationships, going and, you know, sitting in other classes from other areas. That was one thing that I had an opportunity to do a little bit of at Stanford. But, you know, had I not had to go, you know, leave right after class to get back to work, you know, I could have gone and sat in on some just, you know, world-class lectures and really, you know, really sort of sucked the experience dry, if you will, from being at an institution like that. And I just wasn't able to do that. And it was a great experience nonetheless. But had I had the ability to do that without working, I would highly recommend that as well. Just go give it your all and get everything you can out of it.
Well, so many things you said, I think are just spot on, and really just a really great measured perspective on that. And coming from the perspective of, you know, my perspective was I came straight from the Navy to go to business school at Stanford. And, you know, in some ways I really appreciate that, because it gave me exposure and gave me a lot of direction in terms of what I wanted to do. And I do look back envious of your situation and knowing, man, if I were to go to any sort of grad school program right now, the amount I would extract from that program is just, it's a completely different level in terms of knowing exactly what I need to learn and how to apply. And, you know, I just look back on the lectures I sat through, how I was just getting this very superficial piece of it. And now having been exposed to my industry and my functional role, I could just really, like you said, just suck so much more value out of that. So I agree with you. Everyone's circumstance is different, but there is, you know, a large part of me that were I to go over, you know, do it again, would see the value in getting just at least some work experience first, because it just changes the lens through which you would view that academic environment.
Yeah, well said. I completely agree.
And I know we don't have too much time here left, but I was really excited to learn about your experience in Tesla, and I obviously want to respect the fact that you work there now. But you know, from my perspective, and I think a lot of the people in the Bay Area, and if not the entire world, just really looks at Tesla as an organization with an incredible mission. And Elon Musk, as well, at your helm, is just constantly in the spotlight for his leadership and his visionary aspect of technology. So I was wondering what caused you to transition to Tesla and what your day-to-day life is like there.
it's great question. And Tesla's been an amazing opportunity that it just sort of fell into my lap. And I'm extremely, extremely blessed to have had that happen just out of the blue. And I was not unhappy where I was, but ultimately Tesla called, and it was a chance to go and do a couple things I'd sort of always wanted to do. And one of those is sort of industry specific, where when in the construction industry, you can end up with sort of contractors and architects and owners. And most of the time, everyone gets along really well, but sometimes it can be a little bit of a not acrimonious, but sometimes you're kind of at odds and arguing over contracts, things like this. And the opportunity at Tesla was to come and be really a unique role. We're both the owner and we're the contractor. We're actually our own internal general contractor and internal design team. And so it was an opportunity to come and help lead that team and really try and do construction a new and different way. It really is, just as Tesla's out on the forefront of, you know, electric vehicles and energy storage, it's really quite a novel way of building, is to have your own internal team do all of this. And so that was a tremendous opportunity. And then the other one was just, you know, quite frankly, and it's idealistic in many of the same ways that folks view those that join the military, just, you know, blind patriotism or loyalty to one's country. But it was, I was dedicated and am dedicated to the mission that Tesla represents, which is, you know, you look around, you see just sort of the status quo in industry in general, and sort of not accelerating the pace of change into a more sustainable sustainable modes of transportation and energy use that really affects our whole quality of life, and quite frankly, the quality of life for, you know, my kids and their kids. And so the opportunity to come and be a part of that and really be helping to make that change and affect that change, it's what gets me going and out of bed in the morning when I've had a tough day at work. So those two things coupled together are really sort of an irresistible opportunity for me. And plus, I got to move up to Lake Tahoe, and I live 20 minutes from a ski resort now. So that wasn't bad either.
That is my wife's favorite part in the world right now. We were just up there hiking for about a week in South Lake, and it is such a beautiful part of the world. And that's I didn't actually put together that you lived over there. That would be an incredible commute from Tahoe there to Reno, and just jetting in and having that as your home.
Yeah, it's actually Reno. I'll put in a plug for the Reno Board of, you know, Chamber of Commerce and Tourism Board, but Reno is a fantastic place to live. We've done quite a bit of hiring here. I think I was the fifth person on site. Now we're, you know, up into the hundreds. And I used to sell people on Reno, and now I just say, just give it a shot and you'll love it. So it's a great, great part of the country to live in.
Yeah, it seems like they're doing a lot of things right to attract a lot of businesses and a lot of great employees to that area now.
Yeah, they are, and there's a lot of other great companies that are coming out here. You know, there's different rumors every day, but there are other companies that are coming out here, and I think it's a really exciting, you know, both an exciting time, but an exciting place to live in. A lot of optimism, a lot of opportunity, literally building a lot of new things out here. So it's, you know, especially if you've lived in a bigger city where, you know, it's something new is happening all the time, so it's not really a big deal. You know, out here, people talk about it, and it's kind of that small town atmosphere where everybody's excited about what's going on.
That's awesome. Well, I know we're just about out of time. I'm wishing we had another hour or so. I feel like I've had a beer with you for the last 40 minutes or so chatting about this.
Yeah, but I'm long-winded though.
So no, it's time. Great. I just you know, it's such a different perspective than a lot of the people I've interviewed. And you know, myself as an MBA, and a lot of the people I've interviewed so far come from business background, which is a generalist. And one of the things I really admire about your perspective and your background is you've really done the deep dive, and you have built up expertise in a field, both educationally and experience-wise. And that's much less common in my world, which is kind of jack of all trades, masters of none. And so it's very refreshing hearing your perspective on a lot of these things.
Well, great. I'm really, really glad I could help.
And I guess one last question I'd ask is just anything else, you know, if you had the ear of a group of veteran or of active duty people, any other advice or things that you'd want them to know about this transition or about life on the outside?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, my wife and I, who also is a veteran, she and I met when she was in the Navy. We've had this discussion often that when you're, and we remember 10 years ago when we were sort of on the inside looking out, it was intimidating, quite frankly. And I think sometimes that was even hard to admit to ourselves and to others in the military. It was a little scary looking out there at the job market and trying to figure out, you know, how am I going to make this work? How am I going to make this happen? You know, the military's told me how much I can spend on housing for the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, there's a lot of intimidating things. It just looks very strange. It is not that bad. And I would just encourage folks to be confident in your abilities and your skills. You know, knowing what I know now, I have 100% confidence in myself to go out and get, you know, I don't want to sound arrogant, but you've been equipped with the skills to go land almost any job that's out there. As long as you pour yourself into it. And so I would just encourage you to find what you're passionate about, find something that you love doing, you know, search hard, search, you know, wide and long, and find what you're passionate about and just go throw yourself into it. And you can make tremendous contributions to your country and to society, even though you're not wearing the uniform. And I think it was important for me, and I think that's still important for a lot of veterans. And so I just encourage you to, you know, approach it with gusto, if you will, and excitement, and go hurl yourself into it.
Wow. I mean, great words to live by. And I agree. I think so many people end up in careers that might not be the best fit for them or might not be the most fulfilling. And, you know, I share your sentiment that the military community is so well qualified for so many different roles. And you know, in your case, while you were in the military, that took you know, a year of searching and interviewing and finding the right spot. And it sounds like you did find that. You found that community and that part of the world that really resonates with you on a personal and professional level. And I don't imagine it was easy to do that, to find that. But I think it's great to see that you've really embraced that. And I think that's a great example for a lot of people in the military.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Justin. Yeah. Thanks for doing this. This is a great tool. I really, really, you know, you reached out to me. I was super excited to see what you were doing. And in any way I can help, generally or specifically, I'm happy to do it.
Thank you, John. Well, I really appreciate the support. And yeah, it was great chatting with you.
Okay. You too, Justin. Take care.
Take care.
Surface.
All right, folks, thanks for listening. Before you go, a couple quick announcements. First of all, if you like this show, if you find value in it, I would really appreciate a healthy rating on iTunes. It helps get this further. If you know of others who would benefit from this advice, please send this along to them. If you have any advice or feedback for the show, you can find me at beyondtheuniform.io/ping. Heralding back to my submarine days. Lastly, as well, servicetoschool.org. It is a free enterprise. I get nothing for saying this, but I think it's a really fantastic organization that will help any veteran, give them counsel and advice and coaching and a lot of free, valuable tools to help you get into your ideal college, grad school, med school, business school, law school, whatever it is. Check them out at servicetoschool.org. Thanks, and talk to you soon.